Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to and hopefully enjoy. And if you have been enjoying the podcast, send me an email, luke@juggler.net. It's a great way to get hold of me, a great way to recommend books to me as well. And it's been great to have an uptick of email in the past few days or in the past few weeks. I guess it's because I've been putting out more podcasts after a while of not putting out any podcasts. Then I put out 3 in 1 week or something like that. And everyone's like, oh, Luke does exist still. So yeah, send me an email if you're enjoying the podcast or even if you're not, if you've got something to complain about. It seems like a few people are complaining about that. I've read too many good books recently, and they're like, hey, we really missed the rants, and it was good for you to get a good rant in about the moat in God's eye. And it's just really because I've mentioned this a few times this year as well, it's just I'm just concentrating on reading some books that I want to read that I know I like and maybe I've read them before, or some favorite authors and stuff. And then other books where I've start them and I think, oh, I'm not going to enjoy this, but I'll do a really great ranting review. I pretty much just close the book and not bother with it, or just stop listening to it if it's an audiobook. Someone said, hey, you really didn't like, it's a pity that you didn't like Doomsday Book by Connie Willis. It's not that I didn't like the Doomsday Book, it's just the narrator for the Doomsday Book audiobook was just so annoying, like the annoying slow voice. I just couldn't deal with it. So maybe if I was actually had the book and I could just skip forward in the chapters that I didn't enjoy and just read the medieval parts of that book, which is what everyone says is a real highlight. But it's difficult to do that with an audiobook because you can't skip ahead and know what chapter you're in very easily. Whereas a book, you can do that no problem at all. So if I find a copy of the Doomsday Book as a paperback, I'm sure I'll read it. So keep sending in your opinions of books that I read and the opinions of books that I say I'm going to read and then put aside and read other books as well. Anyway, getting on to today's review, I'm going to be reviewing Robert Charles Wilson, his book from 2005 called Spin. It won the Hugo Award that year, and I'm not really that interested in if a book wins a Hugo Award or not, because, you know, there's some books that I read that win Hugo Awards. I'm thinking, well, how the hell did this win an award? I was actually chatting to someone over in San Francisco, that one of the guys who's working there at the Borderlands bookshop, and we were talking about Hugo winners, and he said, yeah, well, last year there was 2 books which won the Hugo Award because the voting tied, and all you need to do is get like a few hundred people to vote for you and you can win a Hugo, like one of the minor Hugos, and the novels as well. The novels you can win. So it's just if one person had voted slightly differently, or an extra person had voted for The Wind-Up Girl instead of The City in the City, the other book would have won. That's why I think the Hugo Award is great for marketing these books for the publishers and for the authors, but pretty much meaningless as a form of recommending good books or bad books. More people listen to this podcast on a weekly basis than vote in the Hugo Award. So if you all email me and say, hey, this is my favourite book, to me, that is more important than a book winning a Hugo Award. Anyway, enough about that. So the real reason I'm reading this is because this is a book which comes very highly recommended by many listeners to this podcast. And of course, on goodreads.com, people have been following along that I'm reading it. And lots of people say, don't bother reading the later books, Axis and Vortex. Just stick with Spin, because Spin is good and the other books are not so good. Another reason I wanted to read this is because I've been listening to the Science Fiction and Politics podcast by Courtney Brown at Emory University. It's a recording of his lectures, of his workshops that he does with his students, and Spin by Robert Charles Wilson was one of the books that he discusses. I haven't actually downloaded and listened to that episode yet, but that's one of the few episodes of that podcast, one of the few books that they talk about, read and discuss in that podcast that I've not read yet, so I thought I'd give that a go too. Like I say, I'll listen to that podcast this coming week. Haven't listened to it yet. So here we get into it. So this book is written in 2005, and it's set over a period of time, depending on which time reference or time frame that you want to take it from. It's either set over the course of about 40 years or a few billion years, which I'll get into in a minute. So it's set in the real world, in a slight future, and so it actually starts, there's this frame story which goes on, maybe it doesn't actually make it clear how far in the future this frame story is taking place. But what happens is this guy called Tyler Dupree and his girlfriend at the time, Diane, and they're sort of in Sumatra, I think it is, or somewhere near Indonesia, that kind of area. And they one of them's taking drugs and stuff like that, and you're not quite sure what's going on, but they refer back to when they were children, back to the times, their one of their earliest memories or some of their earliest memories. And then we go back in time, because as Tyler is taking this drug, you know, at the beginning of the book we don't know quite what kind of drug it is. I don't want to go into that too much now. One of the side effects of the drug is that it makes your brain work in different ways, and it gives people, was it bibliophilia or something like that, or writing philia? I can't remember what it was, but it means that people get this compulsive urge to write stuff, and it could just be nonsense over and over and over again, or it could be something meaningful over and over again, or it could be, in the case of Tyler Dupree in this novel, he starts writing his memoir, he starts writing the story of his life. So that's what we do. We go backwards and forwards, the story of Tyler's life and then his current situation as he's going, like, doing this course of drugs in Malaysia or wherever he is. I should really look this up. I've got the book right here in front of me. So it's near the Indian Ocean, Padang. I'm not quite sure what that is. So anyway, so that's what we get. So going back in time, so it sort of like starts off around about in the modern day, and Diane and Jason are the twins of the fraternal twins of this rich businessman who works for an aerospace industry company, or he owns his own company. And their friend, who lives with them on the same estate, but is sort of like the, you find out he's the son of like the hired help who lives across. But the hired help is like an old friend of the parents of Diane and Jason. And his name is Tyler. And they're out, and they're all about the same age, all around about 10 or 12 years old. I think 12 years old at the time, roughly 12 years old. And they're looking up, and they're out in the sort of the gardens around the house. And suddenly, all the stars flash and disappear. And they don't know quite what's going on. They're like, hey, all the stars have disappeared. What's going on? Now, they all react to it in different ways. Jason he's like this wonder kid genius kind of guy, and he's like, oh well, I have to go and be a scientist about it. And Diane, she is going, at 12 years old, she's going through this weird kind of like kind of hippie spiritual kind of stage in life, and she's like, she doesn't know how to take it. And Tyler, really all he ever does is sort of react in a sort of between the spectrum of these two twins, who are very different, and they both, the two twins, react to their overbearing father in two different, completely different ways. And then Tyler sort of goes along with it. So what we do is that we have this weird thing. Why did all the stars go out? Now, I don't want to spoil it too much, because a lot of the joy of this book, a lot of the interest that I had in this book, is discovering what is going on with all the stars disappearing. Why did all the stars disappear? What's the reason behind that? And as you read through the book, it's a bit strange, because like you're reading the frame story, and there's a lot of stuff revealed in the frame story. But as it is slowly revealed in the frame story, it references back to how that revelation, which the characters know in the frame story, was discovered earlier on. And I quite like the way that the two storylines interact with each other and play off each other in that way. And So I don't want to go too far into it, but like covering the first stuff that happens in the first maybe 100 pages of the book. Oh, it's quite a chunky book. What is it, like 458 pages here? So in the first 100 pages or so, we discover that it's not just all the stars have gone out, but also the moon has disappeared as well, and the sun has transformed into this glowing, perfectly spherical or perfectly round glowing disc in the sky. And it turns out that there's been a cloak, like a shield, like a membrane, extended all the way around the Earth, and blocking out all of the stars, all of the sun, and then the sunlight is the light of the sun is sort of filtered through and lights and warms the Earth as though this membrane isn't there. But nothing else gets through. Nothing else can come in. Nothing else leaves. Except actually, what happens is that human spacecraft can leave this membrane around the Earth. And so that's what we get. We get this membrane around the Earth, and stuff can go out. And when they go outside of this membrane, they and then come back in again, they actually seem to come back in instantly. As soon as they leave, they fall back into the ocean again. And people go, oh, what's going on here? And very quickly it's worked out that the time frame outside of the spin membrane is going at a different speed. Time is running at a different speed outside than it is inside. So what happens is, for every second that passes on Earth, for every 3.5 seconds that passes on Earth, a year passes outside of the membrane. So what's happening is that for every year, actually it says here on the back, or does it say on the back? No, it doesn't say on the back of the book, but what it works out is something like 100 million years pass for every year that goes past on Earth. And so you quickly work out, oh no, in about 30 or 40 years' time, the sun is going to swell up and swallow the Earth and everyone here is going to die. And so what happens then? Now, what we do find out is the reasons why this spin membrane has been put in place, and we discover more about this, and it's revealed as we go through. A lot of it comes from scientists sending up probes, and scientists trying to do this, and scientists trying to do that. And that kind of part of the story is told via Tyler Dupree, our protagonist, our first person narrator, because he's writing this in his memoir. But Jason is the guy. Jason Lawton goes off and becomes a scientist and becomes very powerful, and his father becomes powerful in Washington, and he also becomes powerful and starts directing kind of the scientific investigation of the spin. He's not the only person doing that, but he's the guy who sort of has this innate kind of understanding about what is going on. And then the rest of the world is sort of like summed up by the life of Tyler Dupree and Diane, and they go in two different directions because Tyler, sort of floating halfway between Jason and Diane, he sort of has this quite kind of secular lifestyle in the way that he isn't an expert on the science of things, even though he's read science fiction. He's like, well, I'd never read anything like this in science fiction before. So he goes about his life in quite a secular way. But then Diane kind of falls into more like, it's not really a religious cult. It is in a way a religious cult, but she goes over because for a lot of people, this is the apocalypse. This is the end of the world. This is the parousia, or this is all these different kind of things that are going on there. And so we get this different kind of like a tripod, I'm not sure, like three legs of a stool, which are explaining the different ways that people cope with this enclosure of the Earth and the impending end of the world. Bum, 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 bum. So what I really like about this story is that it starts off big. I put this on my goodreads.com updates as you go through. It starts off at 10% of the book. I say, big, I like big. And it is very big. The only thing that I found a little bit worrying is it seemed a bit too convenient how, at the end, once everything is revealed, it seems a bit too convenient that it's the hypothetical powers that have put this spin membrane in place seem to have designed it perfectly, that so it's very mysterious. And they seem to have designed it so it's very handy for the narrator to sort of like deal out these little revelations bit by bit. For example, the spin membrane, this is minor quibbles about the science in this book, because it is an amazing vision, it is an amazing story, an amazing kind of science, like big science fiction, hard science fiction idea that is played out throughout the book, which I don't want to go into too much here. But like, for example, all of the satellites, you know, disappear. There's no satellite connection at all to anyone, and GPS doesn't work, and there's all this different kind of stuff goes on when the spin barrier is put in place. But there's no explanation of why the spin barrier isn't put outside of the orbit of the GPS satellites, or outside of the orbit of the GPS satellites, or anything like that. Because how high up are most satellites, or like anything that isn't in geostationary orbit is, you know, it's maybe like, what, 500 kilometers above the Earth, and compared to the like circumference of the Earth, not the circumference, the diameter or the radius of the Earth, an extra few hundred kilometers just to get it above. You know, it doesn't actually say how high. Well, it does say how high the barrier is, but it doesn't say why the barrier couldn't have been higher than it was. And I maybe that was in the book and I just didn't read it, or I skipped over or something like that. And there are a few other little bits and pieces, like slight problems that I had with the sort of the overall big science part of it, which, because the hypothetical powers are so mysterious, it's like he doesn't need to explain them. But all the time I'm thinking, wow, you know, that's very convenient if you're writing a novel about this kind of stuff. And, you know, the amount of the different speeds that are passing, it's like, well, why is it passing at this speed, or why is it not passing at that speed? Why are they slowing it down that much or not that much? It's like, if there's a hypothetical power which can put a cloak around the Earth and bend space and time in the way it does, if they're that godlike, why aren't they just like slightly more godlike and just do something slightly different? Even though I enjoyed the big science kind of part of it, it's Yeah, it was slightly. Once you got to the end of the book, it's not the kind of thing I thought about right away as I finished the book. But like a day later, I was mulling back over because when you finish a book like this, I finished it on the flight to the current cruise that I'm working on. So I finished off maybe the last 100 pages on the course of a few flights that I took down here, down to Venice. And so I was thinking, well, like you read 100 pages in one sitting, and you've taken a lot, and that's where all the a lot of the revelations about the nature of the spin barrier are, and the hypothetical powers that put it there were thinking of or planning on, and it is all wrapped up neatly, but it's almost wrapped up too neatly. In a way, I wish it had been like there's too much mystery throughout the book, and then it's wrapped up a bit cleanly at the end, and and it was a bit strange. In a way, because another thing about the plotting of the book, which I didn't like so much, is that it is very much like people like talking to each other. A lot of it is Jason, who is our resident genius scientist, one of the most clever, driven, powerful men in the world, and then Tyler, who is sort of talking to him, and a lot of it is those two talking about science together. And once I actually got to the conclusion of the book, it would have been a much more interesting if instead of like Jason just saying, "Oh, and this is what I've discovered about this, 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 and this," it would have been a bit nicer to just let Tyler like work it out for himself in a way, because it didn't need to be explained. Because if he'd have just been shown what happened at the end of the book, by then we could have just gone, "Oh, right, we know what's happened." Which brings me to the point that it didn't really matter too much what the characters were doing. Because these hypothetical powers, this hypothetical power that put this cloak around the Earth, just sort of did its own thing anyway, and the humans did have some impact on the course of it, and they did sort of change a few things. But even if they hadn't, even if Jason hadn't done anything, even if Tyler hadn't done anything, even if Diane hadn't done anything, it would have still like the big science part of it, like the hard science fiction part of the novel would have probably continued anyway. But it still does, I still don't think it takes away too much from the ideas, the big science fiction, hard science fiction ideas that are put in place. For example, well, actually, I don't really want to spoil it because it's those kind of things. Like all the time, I was thinking, "Oh, this is interesting." So time passes quicker outside of Earth than it does on Earth, which is the opposite way around, because the way like these star travel kind of relativity kind of things work is that someone leaves on a starship and then comes back, and Earth has really accelerated and everything else. Like from the point of view of the person going as fast as light in one direction and back again, not much has changed for them, but on Earth everything's changed. Whereas this is the other way around, and I was thinking, oh, well, what would happen then if outside of Earth's like sphere of influence everything was moving quickly? And of course, Robert Charles Wilson has had a lot more time to think about this because, he wrote a novel about it and had a lot of time to work it out. But often what happens is when a science fiction author will set up a problem like this, like, "Oh, what will happen if this?" And because I've read so much science fiction, and I've got quite an imagination anyway, I just think, "Oh, how about that? And how about that? And how about that? And how about that?" And then the author will take one of those ideas or one of those possibilities and runs with it. But what I enjoyed about this is that I was thinking, "Oh, what would happen?" And I was thinking, "Well, maybe this. Maybe you could do this." And it was interesting that Robert Charles Wilson would just go, "Yeah, you could do that, and you could do this, and you could do that, and you can do this, and you can do that." So he was always, four steps ahead of me, which is, he should be, because he wrote the book. But I find it interesting how many authors don't stay ahead of science fiction readers. Another thing that I liked, just coming back to some of the writing, I think it was written really well, in a way, in many ways it's written very well. There are some points where like the dramatic tension sort of falls flat a bit, because you're thinking, well, we know that this person survives, or we know what's happening here at this point of because we know the frame story. So a lot of the times, instead of there being a lot of tension to a situation where there should be tension, it feels like they're just filling in the details, which is good, because the details are interesting, and I think it talks quite a lot about, the different the way that different people react and what different people's priorities are when it comes to the end of the world. I'll talk a bit more about that later. But yeah, sometimes the tension was a little bit lacking. What else? Oh yeah, I really enjoy the way that they tie together the different references. For example, at the beginning of the book, they say, because they say all the stars disappear, and because the people have to live with this for a long time, young people don't know what stars are. They don't know what the moon is like. They don't have any understanding about it. And so someone said, "Oh, Tyler said, "Oh yeah, I once had a I knew a girl who said she heard the song Quiet was it Quiet Star no Quiet Nights for Quiet Stars no Quiet Stars for Quiet Nights, and she was like, oh, Quiet Stars, did stars make noise?" And he was like, "Huh, that's very strange." But then a few like a few chapters later, it actually mentions Astrid Gilberto, which I know is the singer of Quiet Stars, Quiet Nights, Quiet Stars. I can't remember which way around the title goes. But he doesn't mention that. He doesn't mention that she was the singer. Or maybe she mentioned it earlier on. He mentioned it earlier on. But there's quite a lot of there's quite a nice way that these different things would reflect each other throughout the book. And there were so many times he would mention something in the frame story and then reference it again later on. There's this brain disease which is mentioned, and it sounds like this brain disease is just mentioned just as a throwaway thing in one part, and then it becomes a plot point in another part of the book, and then it becomes another plot point in another part of the book. And this is written because it's written from the point of one character. He always has these different references coming back together again, and that reminded me of yesterday, because I met some I'm working on a cruise ship, and I work on cruise ships quite a lot for a cruise line called Holland America Line. And because I keep working on the same ships, oh, not the same ships, different ships, but I keep meeting the same people. So yesterday I was talking, I had breakfast with someone who, the first time I visited Istanbul, and I was stuck in Istanbul for a week because of the volcanic gas clouds, volcanic ash clouds, sorry, that came out of Iceland last year. But on the first day I was in Istanbul, I took a trip around, like took a walk around the city centre of Istanbul with Jessica, who's the librarian on this ship. And then a few, like less than an hour later, I was walking along with a guy called Jonathan, who's a singer on the ship, and I was saying, "Well, what have you been up to recently?" He says, "Oh yeah, I was in Istanbul for a month." And so we were both just chatting, we were just both just chatting about Istanbul because it's something we have in common there. And it just sort of becomes a part of my life that I spent a week in Istanbul stranded and just staying on the couches of friends there in Istanbul. And then, Jonathan had other sort of recollections of that. And if I was telling the story about yesterday, it'd be like, oh, that was really coincidental that I just met two people and we both brought, and they both independently brought up Istanbul or memories of Istanbul that we'd both had together. But that's the way that life is. You get these different kind of cyclical sort of clumpings of memories and cyclical clumpings of events, which you think would be like, you think it would be like, oh, that's not really true, but it does true, and that's what this book really made me think of. And then this thing happened yesterday, and it happens to me all the time. Although it does a little bit in this book, it does seem to clump together a few too many of these sort of like at the same time that something will happen to the spin membrane around the world, something important will happen coincidentally with the relationships between Jason and Diane and Tyler, our sort of three main characters in the book. And sometimes it felt a little bit too forced, like there'll be a meeting, and in this one chapter of narrative or this one thing that happens, there'll actually be like a major thing that happens here and a major thing that is disconnection that happens there, and then another major thing which happens with the spin and the hypotheticals who are controlling the membrane. And sometimes it did feel a little bit forced, but in a way, that is how events happen in people's lives. The reason why I remember some things isn't because they're more memorable, it's because they happened at a time when something important happened. You don't, you associate all the things that are clumped together with that emotion, and even if they didn't happen immediately, they're sort of clumped together in your brain. Which yeah, so I actually quite like sometimes it felt a bit too coincidental, but I coincident T, yeah, I guess that's the word. But it did, yeah, it was pretty good sometimes. But sometimes it sort of was a bit too like, oh, and then this happened, and then this happened an hour later, and then there was this revelation. I was like, really? Is it that neat? Does it have to be that neat? But I guess if it wasn't that neat, this book would be even longer, and I think it was just on the edge of being too long, maybe. So what else was I going to say about the plotting and stuff like that? No, I think that's about it. So, I want to talk a bit. I've talked a bit about the science and stuff like that. I want to talk a little bit about the characters, because I reckon it's a bit of a strange book. Now, I know this book isn't for everyone. I'm going to give it like 4 stars or 4.5 stars because I really enjoyed this book. But I would understand if people read this book and were just like, wow, this character's really boring, and this character's really flat, and this character doesn't change, and this character is just a guy who does nothing. And you're wondering, well, what isn't happening? But I think I'm going to have to be a bit of an apologist for this book, for people who don't like the way that the characters work out. And I sort of hinted at it a bit before, and maybe this is a mistake by Robert Charles Wilson. Maybe he didn't know what he was doing with the book, and this all happened by accident. But really, this is a book about humans changing and being in situations where they can either change or not change, or what is the things that make a human being change over time? Because that's what I think this book is mainly about, because the characters' interactions doesn't really affect like the science fictional part of it. But what we have is these hypothetical alien powers cloaking the world in a membrane and stopping time passing. Excuse me, on Earth, and the time of the rest of the universe carries on at the same speed. And the moment that the spin barrier is put around the Earth, our three main characters are sort of locked into what their personality is then when they're 12 years old. That is the thing is going to inform their life for the rest of their lives. And that's kind of what happens with the rest of society as well. It's maybe a bit of a sneaky like way to get out of it. It's like, well, if suddenly everyone is enclosed in this bubble and Earth is going to end in 40, what's going to happen? And he makes this observation, which is like, actually, probably people will carry on like normal, probably. And then as time goes past, people will absorb the information, absorb the new information that they know about their situation, if they can believe it, if anyone knows what's going on, and it'll only be a slow transition over time. And that is what happens. But a lot of this is talking about how Jason, like I say, is our science guy, and who's trying to sort of get out from underneath his father. He's trying to live up to his father's expectations as a 12-year-old boy. And when the spin barrier is placed around the Earth, he keeps that as the main sort of like function of his personality. And he doesn't, he's not interested in anybody else except partly his father and, you know, his sort of strange friendship with Tyler, which is a very unequal friendship. There's definitely a lot more power in Jason's hands than in Tyler's hands. And the relationship with his sister, which is kind of distant and a bit sort of bickering, but not too bickering, but sort of like respect between them, that he isn't going to impinge on her life too much, even if they're going to disagree about things. And he has that same character for the rest of the novel, and that's where he's stuck. And the world might change slightly, but Jason's going to be that way. He doesn't have any love interest when he's 12 years old. And for the rest of the book, it's like he makes a specific point in the book that it's not going to happen anytime. And there's a reason, it's because his father disapproved of his first girlfriend. So he said, right, fine, from now on, nothing's going to happen. That's not going to be my way of living. I'm not going to care about any kind of love interests. I'm just going to become this mildly psychopathic / autistic kind of... No, not autistic. It's a weird kind of genius that Jason has. I'm not quite sure it's really categorizable or catalogable. So that's where he sticks. Now, Diane, at the time when the spin barrier is put in place, she finds out the truth about her parents' relationship and has this kind of weird view of relationships, and at the same time is more interested in kind of spiritual matters, and that's where she stays. And her relationship with her brother kind of stays the same kind of thing, this kind of standoffish relationship, and her relationship with Tyler stays the same. She is his childhood sweetheart, but she doesn't think of him as anyone important. He's just a friend that she likes to chat with, and they do chat with each other for years and years throughout the book, but they don't get together. Well, actually, you know they're gonna get together, because in the frame story, they are together. So it's this book of like, okay, when are these two characters going to sort of, gonna get together? I mean, when is it gonna happen? You know they're not gonna get together straight away. So Diane goes off, like I say, she gets into the spirituality, and she's much more like the opposite of Jason. He's all sort of got his belief in science, and she starts putting her belief not in any kind of single spiritual or religious idea, but in the idea that spirituality and religion is a good thing and does provide meaning to life, when there isn't any other meaning to life. You know, the world is going to end probably in 40 years' time. What can we do about it? What's going to happen? You know, where are we going to get our inspiration? And it's like, okay, we've got to make heaven here on Earth. We've got to make paradise here on Earth. And that's what she is stuck in, and she doesn't change. Well, she does change, but it's like the overwhelming event in the world at the time shapes them when they're 12 years old, and you know that it's only when this life-changing or this world-defining event or this world-defining concept, no, what am I trying to say? Yeah, this world-defining artifact which is surrounding them. It's not just defining them, it's confining them, it's keeping the whole world in a central kind of position, in a not essential, in a fixed position. You know that once that barrier is broken, or whatever's going to happen to it, because you're not quite sure what's going to happen to it until very near the end of the book, you know, well, I picked up quite early on, is that what it's when all of that is sorted, when the science is sorted, that's when the love story is going to be sorted, and that's when the religion is going to be sorted. And yeah, and again, it's the same with Tyler. He is always the underdog, but after the, you know, the twins with the rich parents, and he doesn't have rich parents, and he's always relying on the charity, in some ways on the charity of the rich parents, and certainly relying on the genius of Jason to know anything about it. It's only through his connections. And guess what? He stays all the way same, all the way throughout the book. And it's a bit of a pity, because he is our narrator, and it would have been nice to have a little bit more character development. And he does develop, in some ways, but the way that he develops is that he gets a realization that his personality or his drive in life is being defined by his 12-year-old self. And even throughout all his adult life, Diane is always calling him on the phone, and they're always having their long chats and stuff. So they stay in touch, but at no more of a connection. Well, there is sort of a connection in some points. And again, I don't want to give it away too much. But again, and then at the end of when the... of when the science questions are answered, then all of these people come back together again and progress to the next stage of life. In a way, Diane has a secular experience she has a scientific experience, Jason has a spiritual experience, and Tyler has an experience of not being the underdog, he has an experience of being in power. Again, I'm not going to spoil it to say what happens to each of these characters, but that is the thing that wraps it up, and it is at the point when the questions or the problem of the spin barrier is resolved. Again, I don't want to give away how it's resolved, but once that question of the big science, the big hard science bit is resolved, that's when their individual character arcs actually start arcing, and they arc quite quickly, and things come together quite quickly at the end. And that's why I was thinking, you know, all the way through the book, I'm thinking, oh, this is a bit strange. Oh, this is, oh, what's going on here? What's going on here? I'm thinking, well, it's gonna be really difficult to wrap up all of this in the last, you know, 100 pages of the book. But that's why I really liked it, is that after sort of putting us through quite a long, drawn-out story with lots of people talking to each other and a lot of, like, Jason doing the same thing over and over and Diane doing the same thing over and over and Tyler doing the same thing over and over, and also, you know, Jason and Diane's parents doing the same kind of things. On the night that the spin barrier was put in place, Diane and Jason's mother was drinking. She was drunk. And she was always a bit of a, you know, drinker, but then she becomes like an alcoholic, and it's only again once the spin barrier problem is resolved near the end of the book where suddenly she flourishes back into a human being again. She sort of comes out of a drunken stupor and suddenly reveals things about her and reveals that she does have more going on than you would first credit her with, even though I thought there's a thing about, I don't want to spoil it. Let me put it this way. Males and females have different kind of handwriting. And, mild plot inconsistency there. Well, hole, I think maybe you call them plot hole. What else to say about this? Yes, so, other things, as society progresses, like I say, the book is set over a 40-year or 3 billion-year time period, it depends how you want to measure it, society does move on in a way, but again, it does stay still in many ways, and it's always a strange thing when you think, well, okay, this was written in 2005, of course the internet was big, but there does seem to be a bit too much like, oh, and they were watching this on TV, and everything's about TV, and I think maybe Robert Charles Wilson, maybe he likes watching TV, but it is a bit strange that people who are 12 in 2005, or whenever the start of this book is meant to be set, it seems a bit strange that the television would be their main kind of, the main kind of media, even 40 years or 30 or 20 years into the future. I think things aren't really going in the way of television, but again, that's just a small point. This is his world. He can write in it as he wants to. Things that I like about the future world, though, I mentioned before about this religious cult, it's really easy for science fiction authors to go, oh, religion is the main problem. And in this book, it really isn't. And I quite like that. You know, you think that, oh, Diane is going to go off and the guy, her new boyfriend that she gets with, her husband, Simon, I think his name is like, oh, okay, he's going to be the main bad guy. And it's not. It turns out the main bad guy is just like the main bad guys as is in the real world now. You know, it's going to be governments and corporations and powerful people and greed and stuff. And as, you know, as the world plays itself out, that's the kind of thing. You know, it's not religion, it's ignorance. But then everyone's ignorant at the beginning. And not many people are less ignorant later on. So, I actually quite like the fact that the bad guys weren't the religious guys. It's not... And I started reading this book. I think it was Ben Bover, and it was Saturn. And I started reading it, and it was like, oh, yeah, we've got to get to Saturn to get away from the, you know, the religious government that's taken over the world. And I'm like, really? And I don't know when that was written. I should have looked it up. I started reading it. I thought, I just don't want to read a book about where religion is the, all religious people have taken over the world, and the only way for the scientists to get to, you know, to their own place is to go away and live on Saturn. It feels really unbelievable. Maybe it's not unbelievable, but the way it was written at the beginning of that book was, it just fell flat, and I was like, okay, I get 20 pages in, 30 pages in. I think I'd actually read it before as well, maybe a few years ago. Or maybe I read the first few pages of it years ago and didn't carry on. Anyway, so, what else to say? This is, I think, just a really good book. It sort of pushed all my buttons as a big science fiction-y kind of, like hard science fiction. Like I say, it is a little bit disappointing. Now, you know, a few days later, I thought about it and I said, oh yeah, actually, the personal stories of the main characters do in some way influence what's happening technologically or scientifically or in the science fiction department. But really what it is, it's a way of taking people and putting them into a situation which can't be examined in a way which isn't science fictional. And science fiction that touches on the human condition is the science fiction which means the most to me. And time travel can do that, and this is a new spin on time travel. But it's not like, oh, we're all traveling through time and I'm going to go and meet my grandmother and stuff like that. It's a different kind of using the themes of the world standing still and the rest of the world running on without you to examine the lives of three peoples whose lives kind of stay still, and no matter what they do, the sort of like life carries on and they're all sort of stuck in their own places. In the same way that I really, you know, I love Solaris in that way. You think it's a book about, you know, people on there, but it really, it's it's not about that. It's about what's going on inside the people. And this is no way written as clearly, I don't think, or concisely as a book like Solaris or these other books, which I really, you know, which I hold up. But it is a really good attempt. And I found it satisfying on many different levels. Even though, like I say, on a plot level, it can be slightly disappointing because it's a book about people who stay still for a long time when the world is staying still for a long time, which doesn't mean it means that it's not a fast forward moving book, and it is a little bit repetitive. However, there was never a time, I actually mentioned this on my Goodreads update. What did I say? Yeah, some books I read to help me fall asleep. You know, because I read and then I fall asleep and whatever, you know, but the book falls out of my hand and that's great. And then I pick it up the next time and read another 20 or 30 pages. But this was a book which consistently I would go to bed and I would start reading. And then like an hour and a half later, I would have to go, right, no, I really do need some more sleep than this. So I'd have to close the book and then switch the light off. And then I'd sit there thinking, oh, I wonder what's going to happen next. There's quite a few books that do that to me. But unlike, say, Spellbound. No, Spellwright, which was the last novel I read and reviewed. And that, I kept the first two-thirds of the book, every time I sat, you know, and read it, I would read about 5 or 6, 7 pages and then fall asleep and then have to sort of make time to read this book. I'd have to sort of want to make time to read that book. Like I say, until I got to the end of that book where I sort of like just polished it off, the last 150 pages or something in like 2 sittings. Whereas this book, it kept on sort of calling me back. Every time I sort of went to bed, I'd be like, oh, my girlfriend's like, let's have sex. And I'm like, no, I want to read this book. No, that doesn't happen. So, yeah, I'm going to give it 4 stars. It was going to be 4.5 stars, but like I say, after I thought about it a day or two, I sort of realized that it is a very good book. It is probably going to be held up as one of the best books of the last 10 years, or maybe of the 2010s, or whatever they call it. No, 2000 and the noughties, whatever you want to call that decade, first decade of the 20th century. 21st century. Oh, get mixed up in my brain. So anyway, yeah, it's a good book. And yeah, sure, it won the Hugo. Good, I guess. Probably better books in 2005, but I can't think of any off the top of my head, mainly because I don't know what books came out in 2005. So that's it. Let me just quickly go across here and see what other people think of this. And I can look at the Goodreads.com page. And I gave it 4 stars. 3.98 is the general consensus, and 4 stars from 49 reviews on Goodreads.com of SFBRP listeners. It's an exact 4-star rating. So I think we're pretty much in agreement, aren't we? Yes. Benjamin Handelman rated it 4 stars. This book is much better than I expected. The plot reminds me of a classic science fiction book from the 60s and 70s. The idea was unique and interesting, and the characters are well-developed and enjoyable to follow. Yeah, it is. Tom Rowe, 4 stars. Great mystery, great characters. Big level stuff mixed well with individual level stuff. I would not recommend Axis, the sequel to this book. It is the opposite of this book in terms of quality. Tudor, 5 stars. Toguka, 5 stars. Ben, 5 stars. Alexander, 4 stars. Yeah. Oh, who's something like this? David Munro, 5 stars. Can't recommend this one enough. Literate, intelligent, thoughtful. Loved it. Yeah, so generally, Brian, 2 stars. Yeah, I'm sure some people don't like it, but it is good. It is a good one. George rated 2 stars. Pretty good stuff. So that's it from me. You can email me, luke@juggler.net, if you've got anything to say about this review or past reviews or anything at all like that. I do respond to every single email that I get. It might take me a week to reply, it might take me 2 minutes to reply. It just depends on where I'm up to going through different emails that I receive. But email me, luke@juggler.net. Otherwise, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge on Twitter. I post some bits and pieces there sometimes about reading. The best way to keep track of what I'm reading at the moment is go to goodreads.com. / Luke Burridge, or just search for Luke Burridge there, and you can see what I'm reading there, which is good, and recommend books to me that way too. You can look at my blog, which is lukeburridge.com/blog. Like, I'm trying to post something there at least once or twice a week at the moment. I'm always putting different stuff up, photos, essays, videos, all that kind of stuff is going up there all the time. So if you're interested in the other kind of talking that I do, well, not so much talking, the writing that I do, the essays that I write about different topics of different things, yeah, check it out. That's about it. The next book that I'm going to be reviewing is probably... I started reading the new book by Verna Vinge that came out, and it was called Children of the Sky, and it's a follow-up to Fire Upon the Deep, which is one of my... that's always sort of one of my go-to books. When people say, what are your top 5 books? I'd say, well, you need something like hard science fiction-y kind of cool alien kind of stuff. Fire Upon the Deep by Verna Vinge is very, very good. And so I started listening to the audio version of Children of the Sky, and I realized, hey, wait a second, this follows on pretty quickly after the end of A Fire Upon the Deep. And I recognized the characters and I recognized the aliens, and I was like, hey, wait a second, I know what I'll do. I'll listen to the audiobook of Fire Upon the Deep as a sort of run-up into the Children of the Sky. So that's what I've done. I've started listening to this. I've read the book twice before, I think, The Fire Upon the Deep, as a paperback, like as a real book. And now I'm going and giving it a go with the audiobook. And I'm about, probably around about... quarter of the way in, maybe a third of the way in, and it's really, really good. I'd forgotten how much I enjoyed A Fire Upon the Deep. Not a perfect book, but certainly one of those, as an example, of its kind of science fiction where you can... I'll talk about it next episode. It's just really, really good. So read that and then listen to my episode about it. It's a good chance to do it. And then after that, I'll listen to Children of the Sky, maybe straight away, maybe I'll leave it a bit, I'm not sure. And I've got lots of other audiobooks and lots of paper books at home to read as well. I'm looking forward to that. So that's it for now. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.